Welcome to Empire State Political Pulse with your host, former Brooklyn Assemblymember Jim Brennan. Jim delves deep into the dynamic world of Empire State politics, offering with his guests a seasoned perspective on the latest political developments, key issues, and the ever-evolving landscape of New York's political arena. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Hello. Welcome to Empire State Political Pulse. I'm your host, Jim Brennan, a member of the New York State Assembly for more than 30 years. Today's topic is the New York State budget, with a focus on affordable housing. We have three knowledgeable guests, Assemblymember Robert Carroll from the 44th Assembly District, representing Park Slope, Windsor Terrace, Kensington, Flatbush, and Prospect Heights, elected in 2016 as my successor. He's currently chair of the Commission on Government Administration and the Subcommittee on Museums and Cultural Institutions. Welcome, Assemblymember Carroll.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim.
Okay. Thank you. We also have Assemblymember Joanne Simon from the 52nd Assembly District, representing Brooklyn Heights, Carroll Gardens, Cobble Hill, downtown Brooklyn, and parts of Park Slope. Currently the chair of the Assembly Committee on Ethics and Guidance. Welcome, Assemblymember Simon.
Thank you, Jim. It's great to be here with you.
Okay. We also have Rachel Fee, Executive Director of the New York Housing Conference since 2014. The organization has both nonprofit and for-profit housing groups and has built coalitions around expanded housing investment, elevated the issue of affordable housing, and provided impactful analysis. Previously, she spent 8 years at the New York City Department of Housing Preservation and Development. Welcome, Ms. Fee.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Beautiful. Let's get right into the subject here. The title of a blog I recently wrote on the state budget was, "The State Can Do Better Than the Excess of Caution in the Governor's New Budget." And that certainly seems to be the case in the Assembly and Senate one-house budgets passed this week as the legislature's initial counterproposal to the governor and the beginning of a process to negotiate and adopt the state budget due April 1. Maybe we'll start with you, Bob. Assemblymember Carroll, what do you consider to be the big takeaway from the Assembly and Senate one-house budgets? What are the highlights from your perspective?
Well, I think the two biggest highlights clearly are the Assembly said we could do much better when it comes to education funding and Medicaid funding. You know, there are major increases there. And I think we're going back to the more thoughtful formula around foundation aid that doesn't unduly harm so many schools that the governor's proposal would have done, as well as making sure that we increase Medicaid payments and help people like home health care workers that are so necessary for so many New York families. And finally, I think it was wonderful to see the governor take a part of a bill of mine, the Right to Read Act, and finally push for something that I know Assemblymember Simon and I care about tremendously, which is evidence-based reading instruction and reforms around getting not just that instruction, but good teacher training done so that we can solve our state's literacy crisis. So I think those are some of the most important takeaways from what we did in the Assembly One House budget just this last week.
Thank you. Assemblymember Simon, what do you see as the highlights in the Assembly One House?
Well, I certainly agree with Assemblymember Carroll on those highlights. You know, dealing with the Medicaid issue, it has been very significant. I also think that we're looking at revenue raising in a different way. They've been relatively small changes that will yield a good deal of revenue for the state, which makes a big difference in what we can do in terms of other programs. I want to, support the issue about education. We've pushed back on that. One thing I was also happy to see, besides the attention to reading, is the fact that we are losing attorneys left and right who are in legal services and even prosecutors because their student debt is so high. And there is a state loan forgiveness program that has been underfunded and provides greater funding for certain other people. So this will be a way, it's in our Assembly One House, it's a way for us to actually provide relief to the attorneys who are actually providing the representation to all the people that we're seeking to protect in our budget elsewhere. And then I'm sure we'll get to housing.
Which we will in a moment, yes.
We've made some real changes there.
Yes. And Ms. Fee, as a advocate for housing and an expert on that issue, what are your perspectives on the One House budgets that have just been passed by the Assembly and the Senate?
I think my main takeaway is that a lot of work needs to be done in the next few weeks to reach an agreement.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a lot of details, important details left out, and some real gaps between the executive and the One House bills. So, you know, I think housing is a big issue for New Yorkers, and there was, I think, a big failure to move on bills that were really critical at the end of last session. And I do think there's a real willingness to come to the table and work out those details now.
Thank you. Before we get into further detail on housing, I just wanted to raise an issue that's coming out of the two One House budgets, which is going to be in conflict with the governor. The bulk of the extra spending in the budget is coming from some tax increases on the super wealthy, big business, and on managed care organizations intended to draw down federal Medicaid dollars and kind of rearrange and pad up the hospital reimbursement and other items like that. What's your prognosis on tax increases in negotiations with the governor?
You know, I think that while the governor said that, I think that there is the response has been not an outright rejection from what I understand. And the fact that, you know, President Biden has talked about corporations needing to pay their fair share of taxes. We know if you look at who made money off of COVID, everybody else was hurting, but big corporations made a lot of money off of COVID. And what we're increasing for them is a minuscule amount per corporation, but it actually provides a great deal of income to the state. And so there's certainly sustainable increases to corporations. We haven't gone crazy with that at all, but it would produce a good deal of income. I think it's something like the increase for the personal income tax on the you know, uber wealthy comes to something like $5,700 or something per person, which is like not a big deal for somebody who's, you know, clearing more than $5 million a year in income. So I think that those numbers are very sustainable by those taxpayers and will make a big difference to the state.
I think Joanne's 100% correct. The small increase on earners making over $5 million, I think, is a highly reasonable. We'll see what the governor says about that and the managed care increases. I mean, I hope she will be open to some revenue raising, because we're just not going to be able to do, I think, what the governor wants to do, let alone what the Senate or Assembly wants to do, if we don't find meaningful ways to raise revenue.
Quick question on the so there's a $4 billion tax on managed care organizations intended to draw down $8 billion in federal reimbursement for the Medicaid program. Has there been any, are you aware of any responses from the governor on that rather dramatic major proposal?
The only thing I'm aware of is what I've kind of heard in the ether, and that is they want to talk about it, which is a positive sign, you know, it's not an outright rejection. And I think that one of the things that to me makes sense is, you know, we're leaving dollars on the table. Federal money on the table is being left because we haven't accessed it. You know, a similar model has been done in California that's worked quite well. It's made a big difference in terms of revenue, and that money is there, and we just haven't drawn it down. So I think it's a very, it's a very creative, but also I think a very sustainable way of addressing the issue.
Thank you. Ms. Fee, we will move directly to housing so that you don't have to comment on tax increases, if you don't mind. But let's move on to housing now. So in both One House budgets, there's a $250 million appropriation for a new state housing voucher program. Both houses want to do some kind of new state Mitchell-Lama program for, I guess, both possibly cooperatives and rentals. The Senate did a reauthorization of 421A directly linked to a good cause eviction. The Assembly didn't accept the 421A reauthorization, but instead supported a anti-price gouging statute as a tenant protection statute. What's your take on how these proposals may play out in the budget, and if you have any further thoughts on fleshing them out in terms of where to get a positive result?
Sure. So I think, you know, like I said earlier, a lot of details need to be worked out. And I think that list of policy proposals that you just shared, Jim, and the contrast between where the Assembly and Senate are, because they're not aligned, and then what the governor is looking for. We really have three-way discussions that need to happen to build out those important details. So just stepping back, I would say, you know, New York is in the midst of the worst homelessness crisis since the Great Depression. Affordability of housing is worsening by every metric we've seen. On a single night, 92,000 people in our state sleep in shelters on the street. That's 150% increase since 2009. And, you know, recently the city's housing vacancy survey came out showing finding an affordable apartment is, you know, like finding a needle in a haystack. We have a 1.4% citywide vacancy rate, the lowest in its history since we've tracked the vacancy rate in New York. So I think really this is a time that requires serious action and serious proposals to help renters who are at risk of losing their housing because they cannot afford it, and also building more housing, adding more supply. If we're not doing both of those, helping the renters at most risk and preventing evictions and homelessness, and also making strides towards adding supply, we're really gonna be in a worse position next year. So, you know, you mentioned the Housing Access Voucher Program, and there is support in both houses for this new program for rental assistance. And the cost of that program is less than 0.1% of the budget. So I think, you know, first and foremost, we really need our leaders in Albany to come together and say, what are our priorities here? Do we want to make a dent and try to slow down these rising homeless rates? Do we want to have a plan and use our policies to think about tax incentives to build more rental housing and require affordable housing? Those are the kind of moves we like to see made this year. And I think on the 421A tax incentive, you know, there is some movement. I think there is more recognition that we need to address supply, but there's some really important details that have been left out. The governor says she wants a replacement program. She did not say what sort of affordability levels would be part of that program. And then, you know, we saw the Senate One House, as you mentioned, indicates a willing to negotiate that in exchange for tenant protections. So for us, we think that if we're going to build affordable housing and leverage the market, which we should through tax incentives, we need to create affordable housing in those buildings. We don't need $4,000 rents, which we've seen in the past. We need housing that is affordable to low-income New Yorkers. So that's an important detail that I'll be focused on and up in Albany next week, talking about that and a new rental assistance program.
Thank you, Rachel. Before the two assembly members comment, let me just offer a little historical perspective for just one sec. So when I was first elected to the assembly in 1985, the very first 20 years that I was in office, the state budget was late every single time. I used to tell my constituents that it was actually, there was a high correlation between my initial presence in the legislature and the lateness of the budgets. But as Ms. Fee indicated, a lot of the necessary details for some of the complex housing proposals, whether it's how the voucher would work, how 421A would work, tenant protections, Mitchell-Lama, there's not much detail in the one house, and there's still not necessarily alignment with what the governor's got. Do you think that in just a couple of weeks you can iron out significant new state programs in housing? How do you think this is going to play out?
You know,
either one of you, let the two assembly members comment.
Look, unfortunately, Jim, you are as aware as anyone, you know, of the real problems with how the budget process works. I do question whether we have enough time to create a complex, you know, new Mitchell-Lama program, even though I think it's actually a very good idea. I think that it is likely that there can be a thoughtful 421A replacement, but there will need to come with that not only major concessions on truly affordable housing, because of course 421A did create some more rental apartments and some subsidized housing, but how affordable it was is to be determined. It really was minimal. I have a lot of housing in my district that was produced by that, where the rents are not affordable at all. And so I guess, yes, there is a possibility, I think, for that program to work if we couple it with the right tenant protections and the right affordability requirements. And I mean, I think on top of that, I do think we have to make sure that whenever we talk about this housing situation, that it is a regional problem, and we will not fix it unless we have a regional solution. If we allow developers to only develop in the toniest sections of Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Queens, we will not solve this problem. And so we have to have a regional solution for this problem.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, the region, obviously, the metropolitan region. So as the city has become more expensive in terms of housing, so have the suburbs, right? The closer in suburbs in particular. So, Donald, I do think that we know that there needs to be some subsidy to encourage the increased production. But we also can't be just what it was before, because it didn't yield enough affordability. It was pretty much an afterthought, and it really wasn't affordable for people who need affordable housing. As I think we all know, those numbers that were available to be considered affordable under a 421A at one point went as high as 165% of AMI, which is like not affordable housing. So, but also only 20%, right? So it's the 80-20 problem. You're building 80%, which is going to be, it's going to jack up the prices because it's going to be higher priced market rate housing. So it's about that mix. And the other thing that I'm finding increasingly, and I assume that Bobby is as well, is that, you know, folks can't find apartments that are large enough when they have more children. And as a city that needs to create housing for people to live and work and create, build their families and their careers here, we need better mixes. And so too often those apartment proposals have been a lot of one bedrooms and studios.
Yes, and the affordables are one bedrooms and studios and not for families. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think we need to address all those things. So I think it's a more complicated picture than many people understand. And which doesn't mean that we don't build. We need to build, but we also need to keep people in their homes. We need to protect tenants, and we need to have greater affordability. And we also need to deal with prevailing wage. You know, labor unions who are building these housing, their people can't live there. because they don't make enough money, right? So this is a very complex issue in many ways.
Thank you. Rachel, further thoughts on negotiating housing issues in the next couple of weeks or later after the budget is adopted?
I think it really has to get done with the budget. You know, I think separating it from the budget would be a mistake this year. I know there's not a lot of time, but it really takes the pressure off. And we saw last year that wasn't an effective strategy. And I think there's some really important programs in the budget this year that, you know, we do want to see happen. I had mentioned the $250 million for the Housing Access Voucher Program, but there's important funds for HOP, foreclosure prevention funding. There's the Senate put in a new program to support conversion of USDA properties and create affordable housing in some of the more rural areas of New York State. So, you know, we are looking at programs that are going to help all corners of New York. And it is complicated, as the assembly members have mentioned. And, you know, I'm really hopeful that we're going to be in a better place for a deal this year.
Thank you. Just some further thoughts. You know, a lot of the spending that the legislature is interested in, including the vouchers, the $250 million for the vouchers, is deeply dependent on the tax increases that have been proposed. Some further thoughts on the vouchers, maybe just if you I'll offer something and then you could wrap up. The putting together a $250 million voucher program, whether it's linked to Mitchell Lama or linked to homelessness or whatever it might be, or linked to 421A, that money won't be spent right away because it's going to take time to create an administrative mechanism to implement it and time to build something that where the voucher's linked to a new unit. So even if you appropriate the money, you would know that it might not get spent for a year and there'd be further opportunity to cope with the ultimate expenditure, meaning that you could appropriate it and then with a recognition that it might not be spent right away. So that's just a thought. But do you have any further thoughts on wrapping up our little discussion here?
You know, I think that, Jim, you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, the major issues facing us right now are some form of compromise on housing or some solution to our housing crisis. And I think we all agree there is a real housing crisis and we need to come with meaningful solutions. And if we can do that, you know, all the other policy points come down to kind of money, right? We have to agree on how much we are willing to raise taxes so that we can spend on meaningful programs, whether it's the housing voucher program or it's increases to education and Medicaid funding. And so once we come up with that number, there aren't other major policy initiatives like we've seen in past years besides housing in this budget. And, you know, I do want to just reiterate, we will not solve our housing crisis if we don't have a regional solution. We have to figure out supply. We have to figure out protections. We have to figure out subsidies. But if they are all basically targeted to a select few areas in New York City, it won't matter how thoughtful they are. They won't end up being as effective as we want. So I think that that's one thing that we actually haven't spent enough time this year on. I hope that in the next few weeks, we'll be able to figure out.
Thank you.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, if you look at where housing has been built in the city, you know, there was a lot of sort of rezonings that were Bloomberg era rezonings that were pretty major. They have taken some time to get built out, but you see really pockets. And I think, you know, we saw, like, I had a tremendous increase in the number of people that I represented because of significant development that isn't happening other places in Brooklyn. And I think that that's the same way in other boroughs as well. And there is huge swaths where there's an FAR of 2. Right. And so then how do you go about addressing that issue? One of the challenges is, of course, that we can create these programs, but they get implemented really on the city level. And that's also true when it comes to the other municipalities and counties. And so it has to be something that is regional, but doable. People understand well enough and are able to actually effectuate. So that is just a part of the picture that isn't statutory, it isn't budgetary, but it really will make or break these programs.
Agreed. Rachel, any final thoughts?
Well, I agree that we would like to see regional solutions to our affordability crisis. And, you know, I think the governor attempted to go big last year with the housing compact and really asked that all parts of the state are starting to track production and think about where they can add zoning capacity. And, you know, the legislature was not on board with that approach. But I think eventually we're going to have to come back to an approach that does address this statewide. I would also add that the Senate did have a tax incentive that would create rental housing outside of New York City, so kind of like a 421A, different terms, and create affordable housing. And I think that's a really great approach, and that's a solution we should look at as well. And I would say also there are proposals in the governor's budget around using state-owned land, 2 sites in Long Island. And I think that's a really great way to get this going outside of where we typically build housing. And those are really important initiatives. So I would like to see housing advance on those sites, and for the, you know, leaders in Albany to be looking at more solutions like that, because we really got to get the ball moving on building more housing.
All right.
Yeah, and, you know, we put in a Mitchell-Lama for the state-owned projects, because that's a way of getting at that affordability issue and building on the governor's proposal.
Yeah, I think there is always interest in middle-income housing, and I saw there was a mix in that, yeah, which I appreciate. I don't think that was a financing program that was really thought through. $250 million, I think, wouldn't get us where we need to go on a full program like that. And a lot of those sites in Long Island actually require significant infrastructure funds. I think part of the governor's funding was intended to make them housing ready. But, you know, I look forward to talking to these Brooklyn members in the assembly more about housing, and I appreciate your focus on it today, Jim.
All right, let me, we have to wrap up, and this is the end of our program. Let me thank you, Assemblymember Simon, my successor in the Assembly, Assemblymember Bob Carroll, and Rachel Fee, Director of the New York Housing Conference, for all of your thoughtful perspectives on the budget itself and the special focus on housing. Once again, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks for listening to Empire State Political Pulse with Jim Brennan. We hope you found it interesting as well as informative. Check out Jim's blog, Jim Brennan's Commentaries, for more in-depth New York political coverage. You can also find Jim on X @JimBrennanNY. See you next time.